Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast, and pulling back the curtain pretty much immediately here. When preparing for this episode and reading the name of one of the episodes, I couldn't help but think back to that one song from the movie Juno. So I'm just going to say it up front in order to hopefully purge my brain of it once and for all, and then we can, or rather I can, move on with my life. We're part-time podcasters and full-time friends. The monkey on our backs is the latest trend. We don't see what anyone can see and anyone else but you. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
Wow, you're the monkey on my back, but in a good, fun way, Cody. I'm Harry. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Sui.
And we had a last-minute change in scheduling today. Jason is actually not with us in the booth today, but pretending he is for just a second, so I can say also with us in the booth today is our favorite socio-scientific experiment, the super producer himself, Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and on Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Z, leedle-leedle-leedle-ee. We've got episode 19 of Hey Arnold to talk about today, and as usual, we'll start things off with the A episode, which today is called Part-Time Friends. The original air date for this episode was January 6, 1997, and the Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold is okay with working with Gerald at Mrs. Vitello's flower shop after she's injured and puts Gerald in charge. He becomes not okay with working for Gerald, and it soon causes their friendship to hit a snag. Even reading it as it was structured weird. So hopefully that made some sense, and hopefully you've seen the episode, and that takes a little bit of weight off of what I just said. But in any case, as we always do, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible, we've got Jamie Mitchell returning to supervise the direction, we've got Stark Howell, and Julie Murphy Hashiguchi, there we go, serving as co-directors for the episode, and the sole writing credit for this episode, the Purd Man himself returns, Joseph Purdy. Welcome back to the show. Shout outs all around for putting together a fine episode. And I'll kick it first to Harry. Harry, what are some of your big thoits about this episode, huh?
They pit the lifers against the new boy, the young against the old, the black against the white. Everything they do is to keep us in our place.
So that summarizes my thoughts right off the top. That's for Jason added in later. Hello, Jason. Seriously, I really like this episode. It's mostly because I really love all Arnold and Gerald episodes, right? I just really love their character dynamic as sort of like maybe the other big relationship in this show, in a show that's built out of so many great relationships. I think it delves into their characters really well, and it further characterizes both Gerald and Arnold in ways that they are only characterized when they're with each other and only by contrast, which is a really cool and interesting way to set up characterization, right? Like, I don't know that we get Arnold as like a sensitive, artistic, sort of right brain character as much with anybody else as we do with Gerald, who is always characterized by contrast in like sort of analytical, left brain businessman terms. We really see this here, and it becomes the point of their conflict. It's a weird episode in some ways, because in some ways I think that it would have been better served had it been Gerald's perspective rather than Arnold's, because, and maybe I'm letting my color show as I did earlier, a little bit too much, but like, I think that the fact that Gerald is the boss in this situation and that there's a power differential between them creates a weird, dynamic to this episode where the message doesn't quite end up where I want it to end up, if you know what I mean, where at the end of this episode, Arnold has to basically like reconcile with the fact that Gerald started mistreating him because Gerald like ostensibly had a similar like narrative arc, although we don't see that arc. Instead, Arnold just talks to his grandpa and decides that his relationship with Gerald is so important that it's they have to overcome these differences, which is not a bad message, right? Particularly if both Gerald and Arnold had equal power here, but they don't, right? I mean, like the crux of their argument is that Gerald is bossing Arnold around and thinks he's better than him because he's the boss. And that makes the fact that Arnold has to like say that he was a jerk and he was also in the wrong strike me kind of weird. So I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on that, both of you. But that's kind of my feelings on this episode. It's good, but I feel like the whole like the power differential introduced by the fact that Gerald was put in charge rather than both Gerald and Arnold introduces some weird complications that I'm not sure this episode is prepared to reconcile with in a way that I appreciate.
I think that's pretty fair without saying too much. No, I like how you kind of painted that. Emily, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Harry was saying. I think it's weird to see them have this power struggle, Arnold and Gerald, because we especially haven't seen them really angry at each other before. I was remembering episodes like Mugged and Cool Jerk, where Gerald is maybe concerned about the way Arnold's acting, or they're a bit annoyed with each other, but like we don't see them actually mad at each other and in more of a power struggle in this way. I guess apart from Cool Jerk, where Arnold is more the cooler kid all of a sudden, and that kind of gets flipped around. But yeah, it sucks to see Arnold like kind of resenting the way he's being treated. He's not being treated very well by his best friend. And I think the overall message, though, is a bit complicated, like Harry was saying, but is kind of also just it's weird to be friend or like to already be friends with someone going into a job. It just makes for like a lot of weirder interactions with someone you're already close to in a different way than as a coworker. And so I think it kind of tries to reckon with that and the general idea of a workspace being a strange place to navigate relationships, especially with your own friends that are already established in your life.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and maybe even a nice like conversation topic for later. I don't know if anybody here has any experiences with that. Maybe put a pin in that for later. But yeah, I think getting back to what each of you sort of characterized really well, this is an episode that I wanted to land more in a certain way or more strong in a certain direction than it did. To me, I felt at different points that, you know, Gerald should maybe be shown as someone who's either more obviously erroneously kind of in the wrong, or like as someone who like he paints himself to maybe be doing what he feels is more important work than what Arnold is doing, but we don't really get that from both sides. So it's a weird perspective that we're given into this struggle. It sits sort of on this fence of like workplace conflict and friendship conflict or dynamics. And it maybe goes like halfway to each. And like by the end of the, you know, the story, we get something that kind of feels like a whole, but maybe feels a little hollow. This episode, this is one that I didn't have kind of stored in my memory banks, and you know, it isn't one that I look back on frequently or even at all. It kind of shocked me that therefore to be reminded of the fact that partway through, like two thirds of the way through this episode, we were brought back to school. You know, in an episode of a show like Hey Arnold, where we've got animated sitcoms or wherever you want to call them, whenever characters are off kind of doing something they don't normally do, I feel like they're usually kind of kept in that environment. And I had weird feelings about that. I don't know if either of you did. It felt strange to kind of be removed from the flower shop to go back to school.
Wow, it was a really weird good point. Yeah, I never thought about that, but that's a really good point.
Yeah, like it's a weird sort of grounding into like, well, like, oh, at the end of all this, we still got to go back to school. Or rather, in between all this, we still got to go back to school. Although I will say, like, I don't know if this was the rationale for it, but it was nice to kind of be affirmed that, like, everybody at, you know, in their grade sees Arnold and Gerald as the best buds that we see them as well. So like that was a nice bit of world building. I don't know if that was like the most efficient way to go, and all that kind of, I guess the episode ending with, or not ending, but kind of reaching a point where Grandpa's talking about like the variable of stubbornness in a person, and like how endings aren't always happy ones. I guess kind of prepared me for the weird sort of energy I felt at the end of all this, kind of as we've been talking about. I don't know if that means anything, but maybe we can get into it. Harry?
Yeah, thank you. I think you characterized that really well, and you're getting at something that I wanted to talk about, which is just that, like, I think what you had said earlier, which is that this episode is actually doing a lot of different things kind of at once, right? It's like it's a very rich episode, and I feel like its ambitions kind of outstrip its abilities, which is not a bad thing. It is, like, particularly tying together, like, I want to say, like, three discrete themes, right? Because there's this whole idea in here that, like, as Emily noted, the sort of like the workplace introduction has like corrupted this friendship, and it's brought like life out of balance, right? Like, I think the reason we go back to school the way we do is so that we can see how like fundamentally sort of like unnatural and wrong it is for Gerald and Arnold to be at odds this way, right? It's just like how Grandpa notes that, like, oh, you've been having checkers night every night since you were seven. So it's like there's something very wrong here, right? And I think that that's driving towards this really good sort of like anti-corporate, anti-capitalist sort of message about how like look at how the competition and hierarchical sort of meritocratic systems that are in a workplace, look at how they turn us against one another, right? That was sort of the joke I was making at the beginning with the blue collar reference. But that is so much better served if it's a Gerald episode, right? Because Gerald is the one who's in the wrong. Like, he's the one who starts thinking about it as a business. He's the one that starts associating his sort of worth and value as a person with the fact that he is the leader and the boss in this situation, right? Like, he even says, I'm the boss at school outside of the confines of their work. And Arnold is the one who is producing the value. and like, they almost do that, right? Like, they almost demonstrate that, like, Gerald can't run the business without Arnold. But instead, we're following Arnold, the producer, the sort of, and I'm sorry to get very head-assed and maybe a little problematic, but like in the master-slave dialectic that's sort of like Hegel based, like Arnold is the one who is like creating definition, right? And like Gerald is defined by him. And so it doesn't make any sense to me that Arnold would have to be the person who would come hat in hand and be like, hey, Gerald, like, I was being a jerk. Like, it's weird, right? Like, it doesn't sit correctly, because it's not the like, it would only make sense if their relationship was equitable and they had both been in the wrong and they both had an equal power dynamic, which, so it's like they're trying to marry this story of friendship and friendship being more important, which is good, with this story of like a workplace corrupting friendships, which is also good, but they end up in this weird place because of the way they try to reconcile them, at least in my mind.
Yeah, it's well said. And I guess it doesn't, I don't know if it helps the episode or is like a non-factor in the episode, that it gets into some weird places as far as, like, you know, we're returning to fantasy land or Arnold's headspace and him. I mean, this isn't the first time the show itself or Arnold specifically has pondered mortality. You know, we see him in this dream think ahead to the future of, you know, what the future will look like, which is always like a nice kind of amusing and telling like 90s cartoon thing to revisit, just like when shows reimagine what the world looked like 50 years from now. I mean, it's still a rotten place, but I mean, they don't know any better. They're idealistic cartoon showrunners in the 90s. But that's beside the point. Kind of getting into like weird, not exactly like sad or even like a bummer territory, but just Arnold imagining him and Gerald in their old age, not having lived that life together, and sort of at the end of all things, just like, you know, he quite right, you know, makes the point of like, why were we even fighting in the first place? And I was not looking at the screen. I think I was writing something down when Grandpa made, or rather rolled his bones onto the bus. That seemed like it was kind of frightening. And like, again, not like a weird or bad or sad thing to include in this episode, but just like the confrontation of mortality in this show alongside such a, like an episode that doesn't quite get to the peak of either of its, you know, two or more trajectories that it's kind of juggling. It made for a really strange energy. Maybe that's just me. But that's kind of what I'm sitting with right now.
Yeah. The dream sequence is super, super wild. I think when we see Grandpa as a zombie, we see Phil, like he's falling apart and he sounds so scary when he's talking to Arnold in the stream. It's like one of the scarier moments in the show, especially with the animation. It was reminding me of like Courage the Cowardly Dog or something, like where it's really just freaky and like kind of takes you out of it for a second. But I liked the dream sequence for it just making it making this episode at least have some sort of comedic moment, some more comedic moments than it otherwise does, really. I guess actually no, I'm going to disagree with myself there. There are some funnier moments throughout. But like, I don't know, Gerald being like, this seat's pretty crowded in the dream sequence, I thought was funny. And that he's wearing his bow tie still from being the boss at Mrs. Vitello's.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Harry?
Oh, I was just going to say it's almost frustrating, right? Like, because I really like the dream sequence and I think it's very funny and very creative. But like, especially with the grandpa story. So we get two sort of flash to fantasy slash flash to, the past here, which is unusual for an episode that usually centers on one of those things. And we get the schoolyard sequences where we're meant to be shown over and over again how fundamentally wrong and sad it is that Gerald and Arnold are fighting. And it is very sad. It made me very depressed. It like all of that is set up so well. And then it gets to a point, which again, I know I'm being a stickler here, but it's like, it's just something I like politically disagree with, right? It's like even in the dream sequence where Arnold is like, what were we fighting about again? It's like, oh, Arnold, your friend was exploiting you. Like, it's not that was not an argument that does not matter. Just like it happened again with Jimmy Kafka, which that was very funny. Jimmy Kafka, who was Phil's friend back in the past, who was also put in charge. And then Phil never reconciled with him. And so they were never friends again. Right. And that was the end of the story. It was like, this is not the moral I want to take away, is that like, oh, it's so much more important to be friends and to value your friendship, that even when your friends get ahead of you and start to exploit you for your value and start to boss you around, you should just put up with it, I guess, because your friendship is more important. It's like, that's just not true. That's just a bad message, right? And like, I don't think that's what the episode is doing. I don't think that's what it's trying to do. I just think that it doesn't, I think it fumbles basically, right? It's like at the end of the episode, we see Arnold and Gerald like go to the behind the counter together and they start working together again. And obviously the idea is supposed to be that Gerald like acquiesced and it was a more equitable working relationship from then on. But that's not what we see. And we don't see it because we don't follow Gerald, we follow Arnold. And it's like, if we had followed Gerald and Gerald was like, you know, actually, I can't do this without Arnold. And like, I really should have been kinder to him. And I should have seen the ways that he was helping me out. Like, we get a very truncated version of that, but I don't think it's enough. And we don't get a part where Arnold is like, actually, Gerald, we're going to have to make some changes if this is going to work. Instead, he's like, hey, Gerald, I was a jerk too, because of my, the way that I was working. And so we should just meet in the middle. And it's like, this is not that situation, guys. I know you want it to be, but that's just not what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I was actually just going to ask you how you would like rewrite that, instead of Arnold coming to Gerald to apologize. And I think you just answered that for me. So, now I'm wondering, what were y'all's first ever jobs? Because obviously, like, they're in fourth grade. So also, what are they doing working at all? They shouldn't be doing that. It's illegal even. But yeah, what were y'all's first jobs or chores or whatever, when you were kids or in high school or more of a legal age to work?
Yeah. And actually, you kind of touched on an interesting topic there that we don't need to dig into, just like as a jokey aside. But yeah, like Mrs. Vitello hiring like fourth graders to do work and paying them in cash. That's an interesting look.
In cash. Wow. Good thought.
Cash out of the register. Hey,
not legal employees.
Right.
Keep it off the books there, Mrs. V.
Yeah, we'll send some bookkeepers over to straighten some things out. But as far as work is concerned, I guess to frame this here, like if I were to note something that tied into this episode, it's that pretty much any job I've ever gotten is because I've been referred to it by a friend who worked at that job or that company. And like the jobs that I've had have not, at least for me specifically, they've never had that flavor of like, I came on the same time as this friend and one of us is like ascended in a certain way more rapidly than the others. And therefore there's conflict. It never really, you know, it's never really been like that, which I'm very thankful for. My first job, I mean, like I would like help out or rather take over, one of my friend who was my neighbor back home. Like I did his paper out, like for a couple months. I guess that's, I mean, if you're talking about like a young person job, that's, you know, top of the list, basically. I think honestly, the next time I worked was when I was in college. I spent a semester working a couple late nights a week in like a dining hall making. I was pretty good at making pizza. I was a pizza maker. Shout out to anybody who came to me from like 10 to midnight at Centennial on like Tuesdays and Thursdays. I probably made you some dope pizza. I don't know if that counts as a cuss. We'll investigate. But yeah, what about y'all? Work lives, work friend relationships, anything like that?
I mean, I've definitely had very sad work relationships, mostly because of like my early struggles with like trying to figure out my professional obligations and responsibilities and like anxiety surrounding those things. And I have definitely made mistakes and hurt friends professionally, and I really hate that, right? And so like this episode did hit home, and it maybe is part of why I am frustrated by the message, right? Because it's like if I were ever the Gerald in this situation, I would not want to accept that apology from Arnold, right? Because he was in the wrong, and I would feel like I would be in the wrong there. But anyway, my first job I was not paid for. I worked at my church's garden ministry quite a bit, which I actually enjoyed quite a bit. And I was, even though I'm no longer a theist, I really love like working with flowers. So I was kind of jealous of Arnold and Gerald here, at least at the beginning, not so much at the end. And then that was followed by I delivered pizzas. So shout outs to Cody. We were both pizza men earlier.
I make it a pizza, you deliver to pizza.
I also sometimes had to make it a pizza because of the exploitative work of Papa John's, but you know,
I Mama digress. Mia.
Yeah. Emily, what was your first job or your first set of jobs?
Yeah, well, I'm also excited for the Pizza Boys podcast spinoff there. But my first official job was at Cold Stone Creamery. So I was an ice cream scooper and made waffle cones. And it was funny because I did work with a friend, but we were, I guess he was at one point maybe more manager level. But there wasn't that power struggle that we see in this episode, thank goodness. But yeah, I would like smell like waffle cones when I'd go to school because the waffle cone scent, like the sugary, delicious ice cream cone smell would just linger on my winter jacket. So I would, it was kind of like I was taking work to school all the time in high school, but it was ice cream. So it was like fine. But like Cold Stone's ice cream, not that good. This can be another podcast episode entirely about ice cream, but
Cold Stone.
I did also last year, I was working with our super producer, Jason. And yeah, it also was more of a equitable relationship going into it, already being friends, and we were fully remote too. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of complicated stuff that comes up in any given coworker relationship, I think. So this episode overall is doing a lot with I can understand why it hits in a weird way at the end because of how much it's juggling, and how many different messages it like wants to get out about work and coworkers and friendship and all of that.
Yeah. And all that. My one lingering shout out would have been to Mrs. Vitello for exhibiting iffy work practices. Do either of you have any final shout outs before we wrap this one up?
Sure. Yeah. Shout outs to Emily for correctly identifying Mrs. Vitello's voice actor just based on other work that she's done, right? You said it was Russian Doll, right, Emily?
Yeah. Mrs. Vitello is voiced by Elizabeth Ashley, who you may know as Ruth in the amazing Netflix show Russian Doll. I can't believe I recognize it right away, but she has a very distinct voice.
I couldn't believe it.
Thanks, Harry.
My main shout out, I guess. Also, shout out to flower shops, I guess. I like flower shops.
I would say a shout out to Big Business Magazine, which Gerald was reading behind the counter. that's a funny little detail there. And then just his bow tie. I love his bow tie he's wearing throughout the episode. He looks really cool all the time.
Great. It's messed up. It's like,
it's very boss of him. What about you, Cody?
I think, come to think of it, the only other shout out I would like to give is to you, the person listening to this. Just wanted to recognize that if you're hearing this, you've made it just about halfway through the episode approximately, which is certainly something to celebrate. And I hope you take the time to treat yourself a little, dear listener. But in the meantime, do not touch that dial, pretty please, because we've got a whole other half of episode 19 to dig into. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. As promised, we'll be discussing episode 19B of Hey Arnold, and this half of the episode is, of course, called Biosquare, the original air date being January 6th, 1997. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. As a science assignment, Arnold and Helga have to work together and get along with each other for 24 hours in the Sunset Arms greenhouse when they become locked inside. Not the best written summary and kind of reads into it a little too much of a certain way, but whatever, we'll dig into it. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Jamie Mitchell supervising the direction, Kelly James and Steve Saki co-handling the rest of the directing responsibilities, and the lone writing credit for this episode goes out to first timer in the writer's chair, Jordana Arkin. So shout outs for a fine episode. They're all at least fine episodes, aren't they? It's Hey Arnold. But kudos to Jordana. We know you're listening. I will kick it over to Emily first. Emily, what do you got to say about this episode?
Yeah, so first things first, I'm not going to forget to do this time. We all were a little bit confused on the order, so we're going in production code order watching all of these, so just the order in which the episodes themselves were produced versus the way they aired on Nickelodeon, and what we were seeing was that this part-time Friends is sometimes paired with the episode Runaway Float and not Biosquare. But I realized in looking a little further into the wiki that this is a seems to be a discrepancy with the international air versus the U.S. Broadcast. So basically, Part-Time Friends and this episode we're about to discuss, BioSquare, aired together as a pair in the U.S. and abroad. They were Part-Time Friends and Runaway Float. So that is just to clarify a little bit there of the order of these episodes. And yeah, my thoughts about it, I think that this is the first time where Helga is portrayed more as just a bully without seeing more into her like inner thoughts. And I think that that makes for a really interesting episode. So we don't have like any soliloquies by her. We know she's like bored and scared of the dark and like anxious about the dripping noises that are happening in this BioSquare and just like wants to be done with this. But like this whole experiment with Arnold, but like we don't really see her crushing on him. We don't get any of her thoughts if she is or isn't thinking about him in a certain way or this whole experience. We just kind of hear what she's saying out loud to Arnold versus like Arnold, we're hearing his thoughts. He's the protagonist. Of course, we know what's going on with him, but we hear what he's saying in his notebook. We like know how he's feeling and it's pretty upfront. But this is such a unique episode of Hey Arnold in that we're not really hearing more of what's going on with Helga in it. And that complicates things, I think, for this episode.
Yeah, complicates, I think, what you said there at the end is especially useful as far as framing this episode's place in the Hey Arnold canon up to now. In any case, we'll kick it over to Harry now. Harry, what are your thoughts about BioSquare?
Yeah, thank you. I really, really like that take, Emily. And to, again, peel back the curtain a little bit, Emily mentioned that to me when we were trying to figure out how the production order snafu was going to work out, and mentioned her sort of take earlier. And that really got me thinking about it. And I'm so glad that I was able to bring that to the episode, because that was sort of the lens that I read this episode through. And it's a really fascinating one, right? Because like, you're so right. This is an episode that, and Cody, I believe you noted that this is the writer's first episode. And it's like they weren't informed what the conceit of the show was, right? It's like they didn't know that Helga had a crush on Arnold. And so they just decided not to write that into this episode. And weird as that is, I actually really, really like it, because it suggests to me this reading that I think is true throughout the show, but that can be sort of variously portrayed, which is that Helga's sort of like rough exterior bullying nature and self is not somehow just in a front that she's putting on to sort of protect the sensitive, emotional, romantic inner self, but that both of those things coexist simultaneously, right? That like the Helga who bosses everybody around and is precocious and a bully and kind of mean because she's afraid of being hurt is as much real as the sensitive Helga that has a crush on Arnold. That's not what this episode is doing at all, right? Like that's not what it's saying, but I think it gets there almost inadvertently. And I really, really love that reading. And so for that reason, I really like this episode, even though the episode in its sort of A-plot sense, or what it's trying to do, is actually kind of weird, in my opinion. Like, it's a weird characterization of Arnold, where he's like this super nerd in a way that he's not in the other episodes. Although I think that part of that is that the idea is that being trapped together like this is supposed to accentuate elements of both characters' personalities in a way that makes them particularly annoying to one another, which is a good bit. But it's a weird episode, right? Because kind of like Sewer King, it feels like it's an episode of another show that was sort of inserted into Hey Arnold, which again, maybe is the result of a first-time writer. But in this case, I really like it, even if the reasons why I like it are largely separate from the good things that this episode is doing. Also, finally, I guess it's the narrative construction is really interesting and really unique for Hey Arnold. There's some really great visuals in this episode. The bioscore itself is really beautiful. I love to see Arnold and Helga interact for an entire episode. It's almost a shame that we don't get more monologues and nuance from their characters. But I like it a lot. Right? I think it's a good episode. I think it's funny and weird and complicated, like Cody said. So I'm interested in hearing your thoughts as well.
Well, yeah, thank you. And I guess I like everything that both of y'all said, Harry, especially the last thing you mentioned about like the spaces that we inhabit are really quite lovely. And like the greenhouse space is like another unique flavor that this episode brings. And I came to really like how the musical cue for the greenhouse kind of became attributed to Arnold. And then that was sort of in opposition with like Helga's sort of grumpy, maybe brass musical cue. I'm trying to replay it in my head.
Yeah, for sure.
Like during their kind of squabbles, that was just like a nice little flavor to throw into the mix. I had a weird, like roller coaster ride of me mapping out in my brain what I actually thought of this episode. I think I do really like it. I'm experiencing friction is, and again, not to like throw it too much on like first time writerness. Like there are a lot of great things being done in this episode. And I think we by and large came away positively. The fact that like there's we're sort of shrugging off like some secondary and, tertiary, et cetera, kind of character traits for the sake of telling this story that pops up, you know, a lot in animated shows and sitcoms, the sort of pitting two characters kind of against each other for like in close quarters for an episode. Like that's very much, I don't want to say a trope, but like that's definitely a thing. That's like a type of episode. And I think that worked really well. I don't know. I got thinking about some other maybe, I don't want to say better, but different examples of this episode I would have preferred wherein each side sort of unravels in equal ways, you know, like almost kind of how we got with Part-Time Friends where like instead of Gerald and Arnold being framed either as equals or from like Gerald's perspective, like the perspective of Bioscore maybe could have benefited from like seeing both Arnold and Helga degrade in similar ways rather than like Helga maybe at least in my eyes kind of unraveling more so in opposition to Arnold's like stalwart scientist who's kind of unwavering. I just love the Employee of the Month episode of SpongeBob and just wanted to see that with both of them at each other's throats. I'm a sucker for that episode and that show as well as this one. But again, like the throwing character personas at each other and not just these two, like it was a treat to see them kind of, dueling in a sense this episode. And like, again, for the umpteenth time, probably like, I don't know if it is like first time writerness being like, hey, what if like, why not? Let's throw Phoebe and Stinky together to kind of bookend this episode. Like what would happen there? And we get to see that, you know, that's like it's fun to explore that. Yeah, I loved seeing those two together. That was really funny. Like they have interesting energy together. I hate using the word interesting. They have hilarious energy. That's what we'll go with. So I like there are a lot of really great things in this episode that I came away really really liking, even if it is I'll just keep using the word flavor. It was a different flavor maybe than what I was expecting.
Yeah, this episode makes me think of Roughing It more than any other, which we were talking about a bit in our watch party. So the camping episode where Helga and Phoebe are with Big Bob, Helga's bully of a father, and they're out camping and Arnold and Gerald swing over and they all, you know, that whole episode that we discussed earlier on the pod. I don't have to get into that whole one. But like Helga is acting like her father, Big Bob, in this episode. More so than we've seen her before. Like she's obviously a bully. But here she's like, it's just like very on the nose the way that she's acting. So similarly to her, father, and she's like very selfish. She brings all these gadgets. She brings a popcorn machine and a television that she obviously can't use in this and controlled environment they keep describing as a biosquare. So I just think it's, yeah, it's sort of strange to see that. Like, it's such, it's, and it's like a bummer too. It's like, oh man, you don't want to see Helga, like our Helga acting like, you know, one of the worst characters, her pretty much just a manipulative shitty father. So yeah, that sits weird.
Sure. I don't want to disagree with you because I understand where you're coming from, but I do like to see Helga like that. I actually love to see the idea that like that Helga is kind of like this jerk, and that it's okay for her to be the protagonist and for her to be this like selfish, manipulative kind of bossy girl. And similarly to that, this episode, it's interesting because it makes so many weird decisions, right? It's like you had said, Cody, there is such a trope that this show is doing where like every episode of a television show has this episode where the two quote unquote romantic leads get stuck together in this place and they have to like deal with the nuances of their relationship, right? This is such a weird take on that because like the obvious move would have been like, oh, Helga has to like, there's the romantic tension that she has. And that is coinciding with her, the image that she has to maintain where she's this tough bully who doesn't want to let on that she likes Arnold. Meanwhile, Arnold is like this very earnest guy who's just trying to do it this way. And he keeps letting Helga get under his skin accidentally and they both deteriorate. Like that is the obvious episode you write out of this, right? It's the episode that in a lot of ways should have come out of this. So it's so strange to me that they decided instead like, hey, what if, again, one character was clearly in the wrong, the other character didn't react to it at all or unravel in any real capacity outside of getting frustrated. And we just completely sidestep the obvious plot line that should be playing out through this episode, right? It's like a weird, almost inadvertent, but deep subversion of expectations in a way that I actually really like, right? It just like, it brings out so many different, to use Cody's word, like flavors of Hey Arnold that are no less nuanced, but that are just very unexpected. And it's almost like a different way to look at and think about the show and its characters than we're used to. And I think that the unique narrative framing also does a bit of that, right? And so that's why this episode is just deeply interesting to me in that, in the ways that it works and in maybe even more so the ways that it really doesn't work, I guess.
Yeah, I think their symbolizing of the red and black ant is, yeah, also just on the nose with this one. Like, will these very different creatures, but somewhat similar creatures, get together and figure things out, or will they not? Yeah. I'm wondering what Cody was wanting to say, though. That was all I wanted to mention.
No, that's, I'm glad you did. And, like, in the moment while watching it as, like, somebody who's has seen this episode and this show many times before, like the ant or the metaphor of the ants feels a little more pointed, but I'm very glad it was there. Also, like, they did a great job animating the ants. I don't know, I thought that was kind of cute. So I'm glad they did that. And I think, like, also the framing of this episode and the bully Helga-ness of this episode, I think a lot of that would have felt low-key different if we hadn't have been afforded the opportunity to leave the greenhouse at various times. It was actually kind of really valuable having Grandpa and Mr. Kokoschka there on the outside, even though they're really like, they are just there for gags and like we get maybe like 20 to 30 seconds of them. But those were like very efficient seconds in my mind. Just like to step out, get a breath of fresh air with, you know, a couple generations ahead of us. The idea of Mr. Kokoschka and Grandpa referring to Helga as the little girl and waving to her, like that's something I didn't realize had been embedded in my memory for so long. But like hearing it again, like kind of made that flood all the way back. And also like just Helga's bullying at or like, I don't know, her energy in this episode is like, I don't want to say it's undermined, but I felt like I was able to see through it in some ways. Like, I don't know. There was a moment where she says, "Nice PJs, Junior." And this is coming from Helga, who's wearing a onesie, which, like, I don't know if that's intentionally funny or what, but that's just like, okay, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Anyways, I'm rambling. Harry, what do you have to say?
Two things. First of all, like, I also, in perfect keeping with this episode's weird off the wall energy, like, it's such a good example to like, to counter Stinky and Phoebe, where it's like, you've never thought about those two characters together, but now that they're together, you really love that interaction. And it's just like a nice little treat. It's so similar, right? It's like, why is Oscar out there? Of all of the people, of all of the boarding house residents, why is Oscar the one that's out there hanging out with Phil all night while they watch these kids? It doesn't make any sense, but it's hilarious, right? Like, I love to see Oscar out there. I love that they just put him into this episode, and it really like gives a lot. And then the other thing is what you said at the tail end there, which is like Helga, her writing is so good in this episode and so sharp. And it's just like, it's yet another in like a long line of complete showcases for Francesca Smith, right? Where it's just like, she has these hilarious, precocious lines where she like makes literary references and while she's making fun of Arnold. And she just like the way that she punctuates her put downs and the way that she plays this character is just so masterful that it just like, she brings so much to Helga as a character. And so that's why, like, whenever Helga's on screen, it's like, man, I just like, I cannot wait to hear what she says next. Right. Because it's going to be so funny.
Yeah. I was blown away when in the span of about 10 seconds, Arnold has his, like one of his many nerdy kind of ramblings in this episode. He references Walden and then Helga shoots back. It's like, yes. hold up there, Madame Curie. It's like, what am I reading? Calvin and Hobbes? This like, I'm ostensibly a quote unquote grown up. And like this episode has already gotten way too smart for me. You know what I mean? Like that's, I like when this show does that. I like when Calvin and Hobbes does that. I like when works like dip into strange, unfamiliar waters. They kind of reach for it a little. Like that's I don't know. And Harry, I think like you going all the way and characterizing Oscar's presence in that way, I didn't even think about why he was there in the first place. There are so many people in that boarding house who could be out there. It makes no sense that, well, I don't know. Oscar is kind of like a weird sadist.
He's probably just hanging around is the thing. Everybody else is probably at work and Oscar is obviously not at work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good, that's a really good point. And
yeah. I love those crazy kids. Oh, sorry. I just messed up everything.
No, that's yeah, just those crazy kids, just anybody who's not Arnold is like that little boy or that little girl.
Yes.
I meant to say this earlier really quick, Emily. I love that you pointed out like the Big Bob feeding into Helga and like how Big Bob
so
as a character
smart.
Has
yeah, it's so good.
He has a distinct presence like in episodes that we do not see him in. And the fact that he did sort of make his, I think he basically made his character debut in Roughin' It in that Campin' episode. And like that, it just makes so much sense. Anytime we see Helga occupying this sort of manic space, the reliance on electronics, the stubbornness, the loud brashness, like that, it adds so much nuance to her character and to the performance of Francesca Marie Smith it doesn't add on the surface a whole lot to this episode, but like when you look back on it, it's like, man, I mean, especially since we're watching these episodes pretty rapidly in succession, that's a really, really nice takeaway to have upon rewatch.
Yeah. I forgot to do that, but I wanted to go back and geek out about that insight too, because it's so funny and so true that like Helga is resoundingly her father's daughter, like almost in spite of it all. And like there's something horrifying, as you said, Emily, about that, but there's also something so endearing and enriching about that, especially the way that their characters are going to develop later. But I love Helga as a character, especially when they lean into that, right? Into the sort of the ugly, jagged parts that maybe we don't want to see. It's just, it's hilarious and so true to life and so good, especially like particularly again for like this portrait of a precocious 9-year-old on the cusp of so many things. It's just like, man, she's like a character for the ages.
Yeah, I think that's why this one sits weirder for me is just because since you're not seeing that Helga's perspective or her inner dynamic and or not energies. Wow, it's really Friday, isn't it? Because I am losing track of the English language.
Friday.
Just the fact that we don't have the more dynamic inner thoughts of Helga here and seeing how she relates to Arnold and is so in love with him, like that isn't at all a part of this episode. So we're just seeing that one side of like how she's behaving like her dad in a bad way. And it's like, oh shoot. So you just see that one side of her. And I think that just feels kind of sad to me, but that's okay. Cause it's definitely a fun episode and a cool one to watch overall since, you know, it's a Hey Arnold episode. And then I also wanted to just mention the fact that the incessant dripping is such a fun part of the episode. And it reminds me of Das Subway, where we have all the tapping and the clicking and everyone's freaking out on the subway that's stopped on the tracks. And you have the mantra, big open spaces to like try to calm down. They have that whole like ambient anxious bit, and I think that's comes into play nicely here with the dripping driving Helga crazy. And I do feel like she is pretty relatable too, though, despite being, you know, so selfish and so rude and everything to Arnold. Like, she just wants to hang out in this beautiful little nature-y square of really nice plants and landscaping and stuff. She wants to just read her Archie comics and like chill and have popcorn, but Arnold is being a major nerd and has to do all these, you know, science experiments. So I do find her relatable, despite me just wishing that her more dynamic characterization was shown in some sort of way.
I mean, that's pretty valid. There is nothing in the world more relatable than wanting to kick back with a bowl of popcorn and watch a couple movies over the span of 24 hours or longer in isolation. Yikes. The only lingering shout out that I wanted to give, and we've already mentioned Stinky, but really, again, big props to that character and for that voice actor whose name I cannot think of off the top of my head, but the reading of lines such as "and measured my drool" is stellar, otherworldly. And I guess I'll open it up to both you two. Any lingering thoughts that we didn't get to or any shout outs you'd like to give?
I've got real quick shout outs. I love when Helga calls Arnold a bio nerd, or calls it a bio nerd bubble. Refers to the bio squared as such. And then just the fact that Grandpa's like, turn up the water. Okay. What? Like, why on earth would you want me to turn up the hose? But it's your experiment. So like he doesn't even consult them. He's like, oh, this is what they want. And you know, I don't want to question it. I'm just going to go for it. So Grandpa Phil's amazing. And yeah, Oscar and him are hilarious in their short time in the episode.
Yeah, that was one of my big shout outs as well, is that they go back to the well of Oscar and Phil comically misunderstanding what the kids are trying to communicate like three times. Every single one of those bits is a complete home run, in my opinion. Like, I think it's so funny every time it happens, especially the fact that it's repeated is just a really good bit. I believe that Stinky Peterson's voice actor is Tim Blake Nelson. Cody, you can...
Are you serious?
No, it's not, but it should be.
Wow.
It almost is.
Here, if you keep talking, I can look it up in the background.
it's super not Tim Blake Nelson, but it should be, because, you know. And then my last shout out is that this one line Helga has, which it's like kind of a throwaway line, right? But she's just eating a bunch of candy bars and she says, that Jughead sure gets into some crazy predicaments. For whatever reason, that line had made a enduring impression on my dad, and he uses it a lot. He used to particularly use it to make fun of me whenever I was being lazy. So for instance, I would be reading manga as I am wont to do on the couch during like a summer vacation or something, and he would come in from like doing whatever like chore, like mowing lawn or whatever he was doing, and he would look at me sitting there with like a candy bar and a comic, and he would be like, boy, that Jughead sure gets himself into some crazy predicaments. So it's like that line just rattles around in my brain to this day, and so it's very funny to return to it.
Shout out to your dad for that.
Yeah.
Shout out to Harry's dad for that. Christopher Wahlberg appears to have been the voice behind Stinky Peterson most of his appearances. So a well-warranted shout out to Christopher Wahlberg. Again, that's Christopher Wahlberg. If you're listening, you've just heard your name for the fourth time right now, Christopher Wahlberg. Boy, oh boy.
Congratulations, Mark.
Happy Friday, fellas.
Happy Friday. We're bringing in some Friday energy, which pulling back the curtain is a little unique to us. This episode of the podcast has kind of been its own fun little experiment, and we thank you for listening to it as it unfolded. In case you weren't aware, you've been listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
I've always wondered why you both say I've been so-and-so, and I never follow you up with it, but I will now. I've been Emily Suey, and you can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
I guess it's just funny for me to think about the fact that I was this person in this space for this period of time, but in reality it is just the same dopey-dope person. And it's no longer a bit. But no time to be sad because it's Friday night and we've got stuff to do. Which reminds me, that does remind me, we will see you all at Checkers Night.